It is PDQ core rules.
Oh, that's what it is. It's PDQ core rules. That's right. It's the same thing as Atomic Sock Monkey.
Yeah, that helps.
Sorry.
See, you're on this show to be the indie games guy.
That's my shtick.
That's your
Shtick
thing,
is indie
man.
games guy.
You can like throw any you can go adjective verb, and I'll be like, oh no, tell me about that game, and you'll be like Truculent Rose. Have you played Truculent Rose? No. No, I haven't played Truculent Rose.
have you played Splendiferous Marmoset? It's really rather amazing.
I have not. Tell me
You
about
should
it.
try it.
No, it's more different.
I recommend it to you.
From the Rule Zero Studios in High Bar Zoom, this is Rule Zero, the podcast for gamers to talk about gaming. All games, all gaming, all the time. Welcome to the conversation.
Welcome back to the Rule Zero podcast. I'm Pete, and my name is A Killing Word.
And I'm Chris, and what's in the box is me.
You're right, it is.
What have you been doing lately, Pete?
Well, Chris, basically, I've just been healing up, actually. I was very, very sick for a while there, and now I'm feeling a lot better. Been playing a little bit of The Mists of Pandaria online and hanging with my family. What have you been up to?
I lucked into the most interesting thing that happened to me all year so far.
And that was?
I submitted a wondrous item in the Paizo RPG Superstar 2013 contest.
Yes, I believe we posted that on the website.
Yes, but we never got to talk about
no.
it. What happens is there is an open solicitation for entries, and anybody can type up a wondrous item, and you submit it to Paizo, and in this year's contest, it was done differently. In previous years, a panel of judges looked at every single magic item that came in.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And voted and decided on the top 32 to go on to the next round.
Right.
This year, they did it a little differently. This year, any registered user with an account on Paizo.com could vote on the top 32.
So a proper democracy in that case.
What happened was you were always shown two magic items side by side, and you would vote for the better of the two.
Gotcha.
And in that way, the top votes would bubble up to the top.
Right.
And then the judges got to look at the top, 80 or so. I'm not sure exactly how many they looked at. And they decided from the top 80 which ones would make it to the top 32.
Okay.
I'm not sure what their criteria for judgment was. I'm not sure how they arrived at their decision.
Mm-hmm.
It's whatever reason they would disqualify some. And, they presented 32 as the top 32. And this year, this is the second year I've entered the contest.
Right, right, right.
And this year, my item was chosen as one of the top 32.
Fantastic.
I kind of feel that if it were just the judges looking at the items,
mm-hmm.
it might not have made it.
Right.
Just for various reasons that, we are our own worst critics.
Oh, that, yeah.
I thought there were some technical details that a professional judge would say, you did this wrong.
Wow.
And because I didn't expect to make it to the top 32, I didn't look at the next round of the contest. So when I made it, I was surprised to find that I had 3 days to think about and create an archetype.
Oh.
And in Pathfinder, an archetype is kind of like a kit was in 2nd edition Dungeons
right.
and Dragons.
Yeah.
You trade out some of your class abilities for other abilities that are uniquely flavored to a particular setting or a theme. But it's basically supposed to be, this is as powerful as a normal one of this class, but is different.
Wow.
And I created a ranger archetype, and that was probably my mistake. Obviously, I didn't get to go on to the next round.
And what was your archetype?
My archetype was called the River Steward.
Okay.
Because just like in many reality shows where it's elimination, create a product and, half of the people are eliminated.
Right.
There was a twist, and the twist this time was it has to be suitable for the River Kingdoms, and that's a particular region in Valerian, which is the Pathfinder campaign setting.
Right.
I tailored a ranger to the River Kingdoms, and it was okay. I mean, when I typed it up, I tried to be interesting. I tried to be creative. I got some very good comments from the judges and from the public.
Nice.
It didn't make it to the next round. I feel that the people who did make it to the next round had vastly superior work to mine.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
And I think it really kind of inspired me to kind of step it up. And when I submitted it, I didn't think, oh, well, this will do. I really worked hard on creating the archetype.
Nice.
Because I thought this is for all the marbles, you know? And the winner gets basically a freelancing job from Paizo, which I don't really need a job. I have a job right now.
Yes.
Really.
Right.
But it would be good to have that opportunity.
Right. No, it would. Completely.
I've been playing games for something like 30 years.
Yes, you have.
I've always considered myself a consumer of games, and I never really thought of myself as being a producer of games.
Okay.
Even though I have always played a homebrew campaign.
So you are a producer of games.
But I never really thought of creating anything for public consumption.
Fair enough.
And this contest really kind of made me think, you know, why not?
Hey, exactly.
And I learned an awful lot from this one round of being in the contest on a competitive level. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of thinking, you know, I've now, like, since that's happened, I've been like, oh, I should have done it this way. Oh, I should have done it this way. And now I'm thinking, I still can.
Wow.
You know, Pathfinder is an open
source,
game system.
Yeah, yeah.
So why can't I produce material for it and release it on my own?
I mean, that's kind of what my buddy Judd did. I mean, he talked to the creator of Sorcerer before he put out the Dictionary of Moo. But...
And what we were talking about with Mike last episode, it's like, you know, anybody can do this.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you don't need a contest from Paizo to get in the game.
True.
How well can you handle a word processor?
Mm-hmm. How well can you handle word processor, and how well can you handle... criticism.
That was actually a kind of an intimidating part of the contest, was that whatever I wrote was going to be out there. But I found every comment to be constructive in some way, even if they didn't like what I put out.
Fair enough. That's actually really good all by its lonesome, you know?
Uh-huh.
I mean, they genuinely gave you decent feedback, and that's...
And I was really kind of surprised that happened, because... I've seen the internet.
Yes, no, yeah. And I've been, like, under attack because of some of the things that I've thrown up there, so I totally understand.
People who made these criticisms, they read my work and thought about things that I said. And that was more flattering than anything they could have said, like, wow. Thought,
that's huge.
You know?
Yeah, it's huge.
So I think there might be some original Rule Zero content in the near future.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Right now, as we're recording this, there are 4 people left in the contest, and the winner is going to be announced on the 2nd of April.
Yes.
So if you're getting this show the day it came out, you might have a little time to go and vote. Otherwise, it's probably over by the time you're listening to this, but don't let that stop you from going to paizo.com and looking at the various entries over the rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past, other people, you know, who have come in the top 8 and the top 4 have done freelance work for Paizo beyond
there
that.
There you go.
But I don't think anybody who's knocked out in the top 32. So drive-through RPG here we come.
Sometimes it's just more satisfying to publish it by your lonesome.
Yeah, I'll tell myself that while I weep bitter tears of pain.
You do that.
So let's talk about something else. Let's talk about girls.
Okay, let's talk about girls.
Let's talk about you know what? You know who'd really know about game women who game?
Women whom we've actually played with?
That's a great idea, Pete.
I thought so.
Boy, I'm really glad I brought you in on this project.
Two.
All right. Well, you know what? I'm going to round some up. Let's talk to them.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
This is the Heart of the Matter.
And welcome back to the Heart of the Matter. We have some special guests here for this episode. We have Amelia. Say hi, Amelia.
Hi.
We have.
Tell us about yourself.
I'm Amelia. I am a female gamer, and now you know everything.
Great.
Excellent. And who else do we have?
We also have Sharon. We have spoken with Sharon before.
Yes, you have. Yeah. I'm unforgettable.
Let's see.
I've been gaming for 26 years.
But who's counting?
But we're not going to say when I was born, because then people would know how old I was.
More than 26 years ago, I hope.
Yes.
Or I hope more so because, we've been married for 20 years, which would make you have, you know, 6 when we were... No, okay.
Right.
Let's not think
so
about
many
it. See, speaking of misspent youth, we have one with us today.
Yes.
Say hi, Alicia.
Hello, I'm Alicia.
Tell about yourself.
I'm Rule Zero's daughter. Well, one of them, not both.
Wait a minute. I thought you only had
one,
Chris.
Daughter.
Well, yes, Alicia is Sharon and my daughter. And we are going to talk about the experience of women with role-playing games. Not our experience with women. We're going to talk to some women about their experience as pertaining to their gender in role-playing games.
Thank God you clarified that.
How would you characterize it? Who would like to speak first on their experience?
Well, I'd like to actually caveat this. We're at a period in history where we're celebrating an important anniversary in feminism. And so I like to quote the great feminist Taylor Swift to say that women should not be bitchy about other women. So everything that we have to say here is just about our experience and not about women in general.
And I'm glad that also calls to mind another quote by Taylor Swift, and that is, John Mayer is a terrible boyfriend.
I cannot comment on that.
I can't either.
But, yeah, I've heard.
I'm happy that we're aiming on the sisters not be hating way about this, though.
Was that by the feminist Usher?
No. It's just that one time whilst I was attending a symposium, one of the women stood up and asked why sisters got to be hating.
Oh.
It's a good question.
Yeah.
But we're not going to be hating. Nope. And hopefully nobody will be hating on our sisters.
You're here.
So I have been hearing a lot of discussion since I've been role-playing about how badly treated women at role-playing tables are treated.
Can you edit that when you
Yeah, I'll fix that. Yeah.
No, I think he needs to leave that just the way it is.
Role-playing tables are treated. So ladies, you've been gaming for X number of years. Why do you keep coming back? What's wrong with you?
I love the game. I mean, the game is just an opportunity to showcase my acting talents and to be in a world that's filled with magical creatures. But I can tell you, sometimes it can become a little bit challenging with guys at the table that think that, well, just from my experience, that I don't know how to play when I do know how to play.
And
have you experienced?
I'd like to jump on that, actually.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
I've had an example where actually all of you were present except for Pete, apologies, but where I was playing a character who was being hesitant in a situation for comic effect. Uh-huh. And one person at the table who was a man believed that I had no idea what I was doing, and that's why I was hesitating. So
yeah, I'm sorry I did that.
No, not you. It wasn't you.
It was me.
No.
Curse you, Alicia.
This is because when women game, I think some men, particularly the rule monkey type men,
yes,
are expecting a certain kind of power gamer response that we may not be providing. Mm-hmm. And they fill in the blanks.
Alicia, has that been your experience?
I think I've been pretty lucky with not having that happen too often. I think generally my problem tends to be when I'm, well, I guess, yeah, thinking about something, trying to figure out my next move, and then having people look at me and go, you know that this is what we're doing right now. I'm like, yeah, I've been here this whole time, listening to what's going on in the game. I've been playing since I was 10, by the way, so about 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys find, we mentioned the rules monkeys, is there a certain game system? Is there a certain game group? Is there a certain group of people that you find to be more unaccepting or, you know, want to step over your lines or that kind of thing? Or is it just strictly the rules monkeys?
Math teachers.
We not that we're naming names.
No, of course not.
Think sometimes it's men that are sort of chauvinistic to begin with. Those men that still, I can't believe that there are still men out there that believe that women should be, you know, in the kitchen cooking. But I think it's that type of guy. And I also experienced the guy sort of acting like I didn't know what I was doing a lot in college. Mm-hmm. Even at the end of college when I had been playing, D&D for about 6 years. And I think I was just more interested in the role-playing aspect of the game than the adding, you know, the technical aspect. The technical aspect of just crunching those numbers. I've never been a number cruncher. And I think
I'm curious, do you think that is a tendency of female gamers, or is it a broad generalization to say that women don't like to crunch the numbers?
I've been thinking about this, actually, and I've gamed with women who do as much number crunching as men.
Sure.
And so I believe that certainly is out there. But the majority, I think we should talk a little bit about the Brita effect.
Explain.
Well, as you know, Dan Harmon in The Dead Alewives did, you know, the largest known comedy skit about D&D. And in the writing community, he did an episode just about D&D, which is probably the only thing that's been on TV about D&D that wasn't mocking it. And he had one of the female characters, Brita Perry, just become completely emotionally involved in an NPC.
I believe I know who you're talking about. I don't watch the show, but I saw that episode.
Well, so this is a stereotype of female gamers, that we become irrationally involved in the story to the point of obsessing over minutiae that the men just find ridiculous.
Do you think that is a fair criticism, or do you feel that that event in the episode did a disservice to women
gamers? It's totally true. But the thing is, because men probably don't understand it, they mischaracterize it in a negative light. To be honest, women are going to think differently most of the time. So we're going to become emotionally invested in the story to a degree that most men probably aren't. It's not to say that that's across the board, but just in general.
I have to say, I had a situation wherein, while I was involved in a theater group in college, I had three women approach me and ask me to DM for them. And some of the best sessions I've ever had came out of that because of their investment in the story. Rather than, you know, spending so much time in accounting and technical minutiae, they were definitely more concerned with what their characters were doing and what was happening to them in the situation. And I didn't see that through college, but I did get to start to see that through with guys later on in gaming as we matured, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one of the questions that I had in relation to that was, do you feel that the reason why he wrote Brita's character there that way in that situation was to poke fun at it? Or do you think he was making, you know, an offhanded comment about women in gaming in general? Or
no, well, he wrote a character that he wanted to show what that character would do in that situation.
Okay.
But it's generally, I think, a fair... I mean, basically, there's an NPC gnome who's a waiter.
Okay.
And she ends up in tears over his death.
Now that's investiture. Wow.
She wants to fight for his freedom.
Nice.
So, I mean, but I've done the same. And I know Alicia and Sharon have.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I've never felt that way about an NPC.
So, Alicia, have you had an attachment that you think goes deeper than many male players would with your NPCs or other aspects of the game?
I think that character, at least from what I've seen playing, you know, with Amelia and Mom, is that females generally do tend to be a little more into building the character relationships, you know, actually talking to the NPC about, you know, what they feel is going on in this, you know, in the environment that you're in, rather than kind of pumping them for information. I found that more commonly with, you know, male players, that it's more, okay, let's find out what we need to do so that we can get into the dungeon and kill everything and then go on to the next battle. Whereas I kind of like to get more into talking to the characters to know more about the storyline. So I think it's more a connection to the story rather than to the actual NPCs. But I could see myself, I'm trying to think of an actual example where I would be more connected to the NPC than another male player might.
Fair enough.
Indeed.
Go ahead.
Do you guys feel that a lot of this is because the mindset is more towards the Monty Hall? You just, a bunch of guys want to go out there and kill things and steal their stuff? Or do you feel that maybe the situation just wasn't as conducive to story building as it could be? Or
I'm wondering if it's part of the the thinking that, for me, it's more of the process. So that's why I'm sort of interested in the character development and just kind of being in the moment of the game, where I feel that sometimes certain guys, and I don't mean all guys, I just mean some, are just more interested in the final, the product, the resolution to the story, instead of getting kind of the emotional side of it or
the development side.
The development part of it. And I was trying to think of an example, and I think I have a short example from the last game we played where we were captured by someone who we didn't know if they were a villain or if they were going to be on our side. And my character was just, you know, sort of saying, well, who are you? What do you want? And since they captured us, I thought maybe they're not the villain. And it turned out that the person wasn't the villain, and they were just scared that that we were demons, just posing as the adventurers, and
so posers.
Posers. But we weren't posers, and I really enjoyed that particular scene because I really tried to sound like my character would, like, wait a minute, you know, why did you call me my mother's name, and why did you run away, and now why are you capturing us? And it was just a lot of fun, and I don't know if all the guys at the table had as much fun with it as I did.
Well, and I'd like to pick up something that both Alicia and Sharon have mentioned, which is kind of the character development. And I feel that women characters are much more comfortable creating and focusing on a flawed character and then following through to irrational decisions. They know that they're irrational, but they come from a flawed character. So the gamer knows not to go in that room and say these things, but the character would do that. And we really kind of enjoy that. And I know that I've seen Alicia and Sharon take a lot of flack in the games I've been in for playing interesting three-dimensional characters.
I've been doing something interesting lately where I'm actually playing a male character. And, you know, I did that back at Origins, which I believe was mentioned in the podcast previously.
You played Jane.
I did. I played Jane, and I also played Captain Jack Harkness.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
And in one of the games that I'm playing in right now, I'm playing Jack Johns, who's a gunslinger. And I wanted to see what playing a male character with this particular group would do. And I don't know if it's, you know, maybe just in my head, but I feel like I kind of get a little more respect playing the male character, even though, you know, I'm obviously not transforming genders myself. But, you know, like, I was made captain, and I was really taken aback that everybody, you know, agreed, yeah, let's make her the captain, or him, rather.
Make him the captain.
Yeah.
And,
right.
And they didn't want to put him in a chainmail bikini either. So.
True.
So,
well, maybe you didn't.
Well, so that brings up a point, actually, is the fact that do you feel that a lot of the, I'm going to go for the word disrespect, comes from the objectification? End of it?
I think it's where, you know, because, you know, to get all, you know, philosophical and gender binaries when you're a female and you're playing a female character, you know, you as a player are being perceived to be more, you know, emotional and attached to the character and the feelings. And if you're playing a female character, then that's more an extension of yourself rather than a part you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, deciding to play a man, I'm taking more of an authoritative type role. And so when I say something authoritative, instead of kind of going, yes, that's very cute, it kind of gets more acknowledged. So I think, yeah, there is kind of a power play with how you're presenting. So they're thinking of my character as a male, and I get a little more leeway with things I want to do. So if I want to do something kind of, you know, dumb, that something that a player would not do... but that my character would do, like walk up and shoot somebody because he's irritated, then everybody just goes along with it. Whereas if I was my female character with a similar personality, they go, wait, you can't just do that.
Well, here's a question. When you're playing a man, Alicia, do you play differently on purpose?
Actually, I don't think so. One of the characters that I played previously in your game, Dad, was a female character who had a very similar personality and would do similarly reckless things. But everybody would kind of, you know, not everybody, but, you know, a couple of times they'd go, wait, you can't just pull that monster off of that thing. You know, what are you doing? That's not the way this works, out of character. And now if I do something like that, they, you know, their character just laughs right along.
Alicia and Amelia have brought up some really interesting points. And I, thinking back to something that Amelia said about, I think that when we do things that are within the character's personality, and I thought of an example. Sometimes I'll have my character sort of ask the rest of the group, well, gosh, I've never seen a creature like that. What's the best way to attack it? And I feel like sometimes the guys will respond with, you know, sort of like a well, duh kind of comment, hit it with your sword. But I think that's a logical question for a low-level character who has never seen those monsters before. And if the character that you're playing has never experienced that particular monster, I think it is realistic, you know, a realistic question to look up at the mage or whoever they think would know the most about it and ask that. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I have a question about playing men, since Alicia brought it up. I see a lot of men playing women.
Which leads me to the question that I'm going to ask later.
Okay. When you're playing in a game where there is a man playing a woman, do you feel that they're doing it wrong?
I experienced that three times, and in one of them you were playing the woman, and I thought you did a fine job. In the other two, though, one of the games was one of the more obnoxious men I've known outside of role playing, and seemed to take a very hopefully I won't get in trouble for saying this one, dumb slut type approach to playing the character, and stated many times that, well, that's how women really act, and the character was awful.
I was going to ask Amelia if she'd seen.
Yeah,
I haven't experienced it,
but it does remind me in As Good as It Gets, when he's asked, when main character is asked, when he writes for women, how does he do it so well? And he responds, "I think of a man and take away reason and accountability."
Oh my god!
That's harsh.
Oh, that's awful.
I have seen the, I've seen a man playing a woman and playing her, and actually I've seen a man who repeatedly played women and either played them as contemptible, backstabbing, people that you wouldn't want to be around, or as total sluts. And it was like, okay, this is really just kind of using the game as a vehicle for your misogyny.
No, completely.
I think.
Completely.
I mean, that's my experience with men playing women, but I have go ahead.
And I just wanted to add to that some of the men that I've seen play women are just fine, but then there are others that all they do is just use their or try to use their sex appeal. And it's like, women aren't like that. And we're not.
So you do feel that men play it wrong, or at least some men play it wrong.
I would say in my life, that's what I've noticed. It's, I'm not saying all. When you played Ginger at the convention, you know, you were also going crazy at the time in Cthulhu, but
that was kind of intended to be over the top.
Because I kind of felt like
this game is going in a place where I would not be comfortable playing in it seriously.
Yes.
So I really need to make this go off the rails.
Right. And you took charge. And I was fine with that. I really, really, that was okay. But there are just so many aspects to being female that there's just so much more than just using sex appeal. And when a guy is playing a woman and he just uses that all the time, you know, but then again, maybe that's not a gender issue. Maybe that's just bad role playing. So maybe that's something to talk about.
I was going to ask, would you consider that to be more lazy role playing, or would you consider that because there's a certain inherent misogyny?
Actually, I know that I kind of forgot about Dawson, which is one of the guys that we play with. That's actually my boyfriend that plays a female character and actually does it well. I kind of forgot about that. So I think part of it is when you are role playing, you are putting a lot of yourself into the character that you're playing, you know, some aspect of your personality in there. So I think it does have to do more with the mindset. So, you know,
so it's not necessarily laziness, but it is some kind of preset misogyny that they might not even be aware of.
Yeah, personality or, you know, ideas. Unless you're doing it, you know, but sardonically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ironically?
That's what I meant.
You could be a
hipster.
That's
what I meant.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So, all right. So you've seen it done well and you've seen it done badly.
Right.
Well, one thing.
So,
yeah.
Yeah,
well, one thing I wanted to talk about, though, is sort of the social mechanics of gaming, because you're usually usually the only woman, but in our case, we're often sort of dominating the game.
Right.
A little unusual, but usually you're just kind of one woman in a sea of men, and that when you're gaming with mostly men, things are different.
Yes.
And
yes.
I suspect my presence in the game is probably changing stuff to more than I realize. If I wasn't there, things would probably be a lot more different. But still, things tend to get rougher, and the less women there are, and they tend to get a little more misogyny, you know, but just kind of for fun, not like a serious way, you know. So I get the sense it's a boys' club a lot of the time, and me being there kind of just one person does not change that.
Right.
So, but us having three women might change that. So it tends to bring out, I think, a different vibe in guys, because there's a bunch of guys together. And one thing it does as well is women become kind of a Rorschach test, where anything you think about women gets put onto this one woman in the room. So if you believe that you're unattractive to women, you start treating her a little differently. And I've had so many games where I'm fending off a guy socially.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Really?
I'm sure.
You mean another player at the table?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like unwanted advances.
I was kind of thinking about this as Amelia was talking, and I sort of forgot earlier that has happened too. And so I guess I've had both where people kind of treated me like I didn't know anything, but then I agree with Amelia that if there's a balance of men and women at the table, this doesn't happen, you know, nearly to the extent. But I think when we were in England, I think that particular group, I was the only woman, and I noticed a lot of chivalry at the table, like men trying to sort of impress me, and yeah, I sort of liked that. No, but you know, but in a way, I did because I was coming off of this experience from college where I was treated very badly, like I didn't know anything, and then I ended up in a game where where I was the only woman, and then men treated me, you know, very, you know, they were charming to me. And
so it was actually like you had the same gender composition at the table, and it was a completely different experience.
Yes, yes. And maybe because those men were in the military and they were, you know, respectful of women. But I felt like that experience was very nice. But
it was also we were playing with older people.
Older people,
I mean,
yes.
We were playing with college students when you were just being, you know, harassed and,
yes,
you know, put down at every corner.
Right.
And we were playing with people in their 20s when you were being respected. So maybe that, you know, it's not just the gender,
yes,
makeup. Maybe it has something to do with the age group you're
playing
with.
I think that's even another show, too.
Right.
Well, I think a big part of it is that a lot of times, especially in high school, if you have a club or something like that, it really becomes a boys' club. And you hold on to that mindset into the beginning of college. And it's hard to, I mean, the first woman gamer I ever encountered was a girl named Alyssa in my high school gaming club. And the first day she showed up, about half the guys couldn't talk. And I think a lot of it is just kind of age and culture.
Okay.
Now, a question about, like, outside of the actual table of gaming, I know that personally I've experienced where, you know, I wear geeky t-shirts or gaming things, or I'm talking to a friend about gaming, and particularly males tend to kind of tune in and go, you know what D&D is, or, you know, things like that, and I'm like...
But you're a girl! How can such things be?
Exactly. We've heard of such mythical beasts, we just didn't know they actually existed.
Which dramatically changes the context of the conversation, because then, you know, people are thinking, female gamer. And that's generally, you know, I mean, I'm in college, so it's people just coming into college or things like that that generally tend to be fascinated by the fact that I game and that I actually know what gaming means. And but I don't know if Amelia or Mom has ever experienced that outside of having a guy, you know, kind of be intrigued by that and what experience that has led to.
Yeah, I think that I really intrigued this one guy in college, and I married him. So
wait, who is this?
It's you.
Oh, sucker.
Wait a minute. So we're hearing about Amelia's unwanted advances, and you guys are talking about guys hitting on you at the table. But you know what? All three of you have a significant other that you've gamed
with.
Well,
this is the point that I wanted to get to at some, you know, some point in the conversation.
Sure.
I don't know of any woman who came to gaming who wasn't dragged in from a guy.
I was brought in by my parents.
You don't count. But as an adult, you know, brought in. I mean, I was brought in at age 18 by a guy who wanted to date me. And he.
Okay.
My very first role-playing experience was in his bedroom. Nothing creepy, just. He.
Whoa.
I don't know. I think we've already passed.
This show is going in a whole different direction.
No.
Wait a minute. I want to know what it is about role playing that made you go to his bedroom.
No,
what did you expect?
No. So he, you know how you want to pull a character aside, and so he just pulled me aside. And that was this room that was free, and
okay.
He wanted to do a little pre thing before my character was introduced, and so my first gaming experience was at age 18, standing in this guy's bedroom where he's just him and me talking in character. It was weird. And then he proceeded to have, like, the bad guy hit on me the whole time. And, you know, so.
Okay, then.
That is not an unusual experience.
No, I imagine it isn't.
Did you date him?
That's a complicated and long story, but it was in that game that I met Bill.
Oh,
okay.
There you go.
But people don't know who Bill is, Amelia.
That's my current husband.
Ah, current husband.
As opposed to the husband before Bill?
I find the adjective troubling, but let's move on.
Hold on. No. He's going to listen to this.
don't worry about now. He'll tune out. He's already told us he does that.
Okay.
We passed the 5-minute
mark.
I'll
have him listen with me next to him.
Okay.
On the flip side of being brought in by a guy, you know, interested in dating, my current boyfriend, actually, who, you know, planning on sticking around, I brought him into Dad's game. Before
wow.
we were dating, so
that's pretty cool.
I actually got him in. He was playing before.
So you were hitting on the guy.
Yes, I was.
Yes, and that's the same, you know, like mother, like daughter. I was actually hitting on the GM, and
you know, you're setting a bad example for women in games. Right?
I don't mean to, but I really loved.
You're really undermining
I'm
our
sorry,
purpose
I'm
here.
I'm sorry, but I loved D&D. So there, my purpose was twofold. I wanted to date the GM, and I also just loved the game. So is that okay?
So you were brought into gaming because there was a guy you were interested in, and he was doing this thing, and you said, "I want to do this thing so I can get close to this guy."
No, not exactly. I found out.
This is not me, by the
no,
way.
No, this was not you. I found out that there was a game, and I went, oh, my God. All through high school, I wanted to play, but I never found a group. So I really wanted to get into this group, and it just also happened that I liked this guy. So, and to be honest, the bigger motivation was that I really wanted to play.
Okay. I guess we'll let that go.
Okay.
Well, I mean, like I said, the three women who approached me in college, I think that was the first time ever that I had encountered women who wanted to game without either dating or wanting to date the DM. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, and you know, 20 years ago, there weren't that many women in gaming. So, I mean, someone at the table, a woman at the table or a girl at the table, it was a completely different dynamic socially, because the people that I gamed with in the 80s, you know, we didn't talk to women a lot. It wasn't something we were comfortable with.
Exactly.
We were teenage boys that were awkward and, you know, and gangly. And, you know, to have a woman want to sit at a table with us and say things, I don't understand.
We're not the popular crowd. How could she be here?
Right.
Popular crowd is boring.
Tell me about it.
I think the Breakfast Club showed us that all of these niches have their own problems.
True story.
Yeah. So anyway, so what's the worst thing that happened to you at a game based on the fact that you are a woman gamer, Amelia?
Not to put me on the spot.
Hey, you knew it was coming. You brought it up.
Well, it's a little awkward because we know a lot of the same people.
Uh-huh. That's a good point.
But in one case, I would say, to make it vague.
He doesn't listen to this podcast, so it's
that's
okay.
That's not the person I'm referring to.
Oh, okay.
Constant harassment.
Oh. Mm.
Just constant, nonstop harassment. And just having none of the men at the table defend me, because it's not really their job, and being unable to ignore it because we're all trying to play a game, you know? So that's a problem.
Let me ask you, for when you say harassment, do you mean like hitting on you, or do you mean like putting you down?
I mean hitting on me, but okay. Not in a sincere way.
Mm. Ah. Yeah, I'm sorry about that too.
You weren't there.
Wah, wah. Okay. Oh my God, does that mean I was there?
I'm not going to reveal what I'm talking about. I've been gaming for a long time.
No, it doesn't mean you were there, Pete. It means it was you.
Yeah. Well, what about you, Sherry? Sure, I hit on all players. So.
Yeah, I was fine.
I'm trying to decide between two different instances. Uh-huh. One was around you, Chris. And I won't mention any names, but this person would just constantly yell at me during the games. And, you know, why are you doing that? Why aren't you doing this other thing?
Like, no matter what you did, I recall the person you're talking about. No matter what you did, it was like, oh, why are you doing it? And
yes.
Like, it didn't matter if it was a good idea, a bad idea. It was, you spoke, that was terrible.
And I don't know. I don't know if he just hated women or hated me. Or was just socially inept, but
the answer's probably yes.
I was so relieved when we finally just said, you know, you're just you know, yelling too much. And I think we actually did warn this person. We did talk to this person about yelling at me during the games, but he just continued to do it. And I don't think there were other women present when we gamed with this guy.
There were at various times. That is a game that went about 10 years, okay. And we had such a long and varied cast of characters. Sometimes there were other women at the table than you, and sometimes there weren't.
Okay. Well, I was thinking that time or in college, there was one particular guy in college who just thought I was an idiot. And I was playing a cleric. In fact, I was playing Crystal, and
yes.
If any of these people are listening to this podcast, they just, some of them just made my life miserable, and I did know what I was doing, but I was just really trying to role play her character, and she was just all about preaching about her God, and didn't want to resolve conflicts by fighting. She wanted to resolve conflicts by talking. And it just seemed to really aggravate this one guy in particular.
Hmm.
So I don't know which experience was worse for me.
But you think in both cases you were given that attitude because you were a woman at the gaming
table? Oh, yes, I think so. Because I felt that the first experience... he didn't yell at anybody else. at the table. Mm-hmm. And that's how I know. I mean, I was the only girl and he yelled at me. So I don't know why else that would have happened. And in college, I also think that because of my gender and, you know, and I was, you know, extremely good looking in college, you know, I mean, not that.
Oh, you still are.
Now, you know, but I think that there was some sexual tension there. I think that because I think what made it hard for me is that I was dating the GM. And I think that that could be another show too. But
yeah,
I you know,
dating your GM.
I think that that made it worse, you know, for me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Alicia, what about you? Do you feel that you've had any poor experiences? I know that most of the games have been at my table, but I mean, has there been anything you think gender related that happened to you badly?
I've been trying to, you know, as I've been sitting here trying to figure out, you know, what something would be, and my biggest problem generally is people trying to tell me the rules, but I think more of that has to do with them being kind of rule bosses and power players more than anything.
Uh-huh.
I think the stuff that I've experienced that's been really more related to my gender. And let me back up real quick, because I think this is partly because I was raised as a geek. You know, I had these two parents who just surrounded me with role playing and geek.
Oh yeah, represent.
Absolutely. So I
did something right, Chris.
You do many things right.
Hey now.
You both deserve the blame for this. Come on.
So, you know, I think that that kind of gives me a leg up in terms of how I'm taken as a gamer, because, you know, I know Amelia was saying that she was introduced to it by, you know, a guy who was interested in dating her. And I know a couple of my other female friends were also introduced to it either by their brother or, you know, by somebody that they were interested in who was male. So I kind of have a leg up in terms of, hey, I was a geek before I met you. Mm-hmm. But outside of the actual gaming is, you know, like I was talking about the t-shirts and people coming up to me and everything, is more where I experience it, and some awkwardness with, you know, whether or not I actually know how to play. I've had people come up when I'm wearing, you know, a shirt that refers to a specific D&D, game or topic or something, and have people come up and say, do you actually know what that means? Like, yeah. And then, you know, I kind of school them on their role-playing abilities.
Nice. Well, you should.
I know. But other than that, I don't think that I've really been looked down on too much. I think the negative experiences that I've had around the table have more been a person's personality rather than, you know, my gender, which I'm grateful for listening to Amelia and Mom talk about theirs.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
I think that I forgot about a couple guys, too, that sort of hit on me even while I've been married. And
wait a minute, who? Never mind. No,
it's a podcast. But over the years, a few GMs that just started calling me on the phone.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. That was that gets kind of awkward, though. Right?
Yeah, yeah, I think so, because, you know, what's the line of, hey, I think you're a cool person, and I'd like to be your friend, and it seems like at a certain point, they're taking the game in this different direction, like Amelia said earlier, and kind of hitting on you as the bad guy, and you're like, wait a minute, is this the bad guy or is this you?
Oh, I can answer one on that. I actually lost somebody who I thought was going to be a friend because I was talking to this person about gaming that I had met at work, and they ended up asking me out, and I said, oh, hey, that's really cool and everything. You know, I am in a relationship, but, you know, if you want to, you know, do these things, that's cool. And the person will not talk to me anymore, which sucks because he would have been a cool person to game with. But it's one of those things.
Well, evidently not that cool, because if he was only inviting you in the game, because he was interested in you, then, you know, then he's not really your friend.
Yeah, that was, you know, but I will say, yes, that is the most frustrating thing, is that there have been a couple occasions where I've thought, hey, you're a really cool person, let's game, let's, you know, do these things, and I'm like, no, game is not code for something. I really mean, like, hey, you want to come and game.
Now, it doesn't really mean coffee.
Now, did he say game or did he say role play? Because that can be a very distinct thing.
I don't remember.
So what do you think the bottom line is, Amelia? What does it mean to be a woman?
There's
gamer?
No bottom line for a squishy topic like this. I mean, this is just the experience of being a woman. I mean, I feel like in America, at least, when you look at different kinds of prejudice, there's racism, which is still very powerful in this country. I mean, obviously, but you look back at the milestones for them, the civil rights movement and, you know, the first black president, and then, you know, the right to vote, which they got before all that stuff. And women have trailed that in every case. You know, I mean, in every case, we've seen that racism is easier to solve than the problem of, you know, gender relations. So, mm-hmm. And if racism is still that palpable in this country, despite all of these advances, then you know that the gender issue is a deep-seated issue. It's not going to go anywhere, and it infects everything it touches. So we'll all try to rise above it, but, you know, we're certainly not there. I doubt we ever will be. And I think the reason is because there's like a sense of I know women. And I think for women, there's a sense of I know men. Mm-hmm. And so there's a little bit of contempt that can creep in some people's understanding of the other gender. And whenever you got a big table.
Well, of course you'd say
that. I know. But whenever you got a big table of people, somebody might have an issue that's unresolved. And they're going to bring it out sort of subconsciously or consciously in the game. And it may be just the woman who notices, because they're the one in the butt of the joke most of the time. And I think most of us feel like most of the time there's no problem at all. You know, we choose our gamers well. I mean, I've had bad experiences and we did not stay with those games, you know.
Uh-huh.
But
Have you had to walk out of a game in the first session? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to derail your
There's
your
one thing that I think I didn't mention.
Okay.
And it's a prejudice that women have, and the others can choose to agree or disagree, but I certainly have it, that most male gamers smell.
Not most. I have found personally not most. A couple I will definitely
No,
play a
I'm
couple.
Not talking about all role players. I'm talking about all gamers.
Oh, okay.
Huh.
So you walk into certain gaming halls, and there's a smell.
I have to confess that one time in Origins, it was me.
Well, I didn't notice.
Yeah, you weren't at that one.
Oh.
It was the superhero game.
As a blind person.
I leaned back and I went, oh my God, that's terrible. And then I went, oh my God, that's me.
Yes, as a blind person, I would have to say that I agree with Amelia that there is a definite certain something about the gaming. I'd say the gaming community, yeah. But it's not their fault, and I don't blame them.
I'll start showering more, I'm sorry.
Well, if there's a room full of 50 guys playing Magic the Gathering, and they've done it for they're on their, like, fifth hour, there's a smell.
Somebody smells.
Oh, God, I just remembered. We have young men come in to play games sometimes, and nobody will go near that corner of the store. Huh, I never really put it together, though, the gamer thing. It was more just young guys thing. Huh, I'm going to ponder that one.
Yeah, well, that's worthy of consideration.
So I'll walk out of a game when there's a smell.
Oh,
really?
Okay.
I know that's not true. I mean, sorry.
So, Chris.
Yeah.
The bottom line for me.
Yeah.
And I'm Sharon, of course. But the bottom line for me is... similar to what Amelia said, I think that I want to keep things general, because every person, every guy, every gal is different. But I did want to say that I think that if you like the game, you know, just try to you know, stick with it. And I really believe that you'll find a group that's good for you. And, you know, if someone is out there and they're listening to this podcast and, you know, whether they're a teenager or a young adult or an older adult, and they haven't found, you know, that group that's right for them, just know that, that it will happen. How's that for being positive?
Sounds optimistic.
Yeah. That magical gaming group will, you'll find it. Yeah.
Okay. Alicia, your closing thought, and this now I'm putting a different question in your hands. You have the responsibility of writing the Female Gamer Manifesto. Go.
Oh, well, no pressure or anything.
No doubt.
Then I guess I'll do my normal female manifesto bit, which is I don't take crap. So if somebody says something to me like, ugh, you don't know the rules, I go, oh, well, then I guess this, and I say whatever rule it is, isn't the rule. Or, you know, somebody tells me, well, you're not playing right, or you don't even know how to play. And I'm like, see what I'm doing right now when I'm rolling the die, and that's my initiative, and this is what I'm doing, you know, just because you're not paying attention kind of thing. So if you feel like you're, you know, this to the women, if you feel like you're being put down or something, just kind of turn it back around. I think the worst thing to do is to just kind of quietly back down, because you know it's just going to pile on and pile on and pile on.
I agree. And
that's a good
and
point.
Don't storm out either, because
well, at a certain point, you kind of have
to. I guess if people are really on you, I think I did have to leave one game once, because the GM was just really just being a oh, I can't. It'll change your
being
rate.
A dick.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, say whatever. Oh my God! Okay, say whatever you want. If it ends up being explicit, I'll tag it. If it doesn't, we're cool.
Besides, I think it's explicit.
Pete said it. Pete did say it, and
he did say dick.
I just feel
so
that there's
got one dick.
There's really no place in the gaming world for GMs that really want to just pretend they're God.
Agreed.
I mean, yes, they're. I totally believe they're in charge of the game, but they're not in charge of who I am as a person.
Or even as a character.
Right. And if someone really wants to play my character that, you know, that bad, then, you know, fine. I'll roll up a different character and you can have that, my original character as an NPC.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that I agree with Alicia when she said, you know, don't take crap from people, because I think I did, because I think I fell into my own stereotype, like a woman is supposed to be soft spoken and gentle and sweet, and mm-hmm. I felt that
I know from firsthand experience you've been more than tolerant.
But I think that's almost wrong, Chris. I think I should have been a little bit more assertive. And I think that I should.
In hindsight, I agree. Yeah. It might have, you know, forestalled some, you know, some grief in the future. But, you know.
Right.
Live and learn,
so,
right? We're
so
older now.
To all the women out there, you know, like, stand up for yourself and believe that you know what you're doing, and don't take any crap.
Actually, I disagree.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
This is the problem. When you're in the real world, yes, absolutely. But when you're in a social group, you want to sort of respond appropriately to what that is. And you're getting, to be honest, this is where I feel that women's prejudice comes up again, because we really want to defend ourselves, and we get angry when something happens and we perceive it as coming from a gender thing. We want to be attacked for being ourselves, not for being women, you know? Mm-hmm. And when we feel it's an unfair attack, it's because we have breasts and they don't. It seems unfair, and we want to respond a little bit righteously, you know? And that is completely inappropriate in a social setting. And so we end up sounding shrill or sort of overdoing it. And you can't – so, I mean, it's almost an impossible situation for us.
Mm-hmm. See, I generally just assume that –
some of them do have breasts, so.
I generally assume that if they're saying something, it's just because they think I'm dumb as a person. So I just respond from a place of – not like rudely, like I'm not going to say, wow, you're such an asshole, you know. Oh, sorry. You're such a poo head.
Bing.
You know, I'm just going to, you know, be like assertive, not aggressive, but just say, hey, you know, you can, because in a social situation, if you are just going to get beat down, then it's not really going to work out well for anybody. And eventually, you know, you're either going to leave or kick somebody out or cry or hit something. Uh-huh.
But obviously, Amelia, there is a line that, you know, makes you leave a game. But you're saying you just don't go off on the people.
Well, I'm saying you can't be shrill. You can't be righteous. And it's a temptation to do that, especially late at night. You know, you're on your third ho-ho and, you know, you're over-caffeinated. And it's easy to go kind of fly off the hinges. And you don't want to come out being a stereotypical hysterical woman. You want to be a calm, rational model of femininity. And we're not going to be like that. We're people. So I think I hold myself in check when it comes to that because I don't want to make women look bad.
Right, right.
Do you think that some of the onus should also go to the GM to be a moderator within the social situation as well?
Well, Pete, since my case happened during one of your games, we should probably discuss that offline.
Right.
Well, okay, not that she holds a grudge, Pete, but you're a dead man.
And to follow up with that, there have been some of the instances that I was talking about, Chris, happened in your game.
Yeah, so absolutely. And there are many times when, in retrospect, I feel, okay, that was too much. I should have stepped up.
Yes.
I didn't. I was much more of a much weaker then, I think, than I am now.
Right, right.
Because I have tolerated a lot of stuff that really upset me. And a lot of that was, you know, stuff that was directed at Sharon that she didn't deserve.
Right.
Well, maybe in another podcast or something like that, we can talk about being a female GM. Cause
oh, there you go.
That's a different perspective on it.
Completely.
I don't know. When I GM'd, I didn't think it was any special thing. But then again, I was terrible.
According to you or according to feedback?
Well, feedback's always positive, but, you know, the mirror doesn't
lie. We are our own worst critics.
That's true.
You know, as I was sitting here reflecting on all of this, I was thinking that
speaking of mirrors,
in the classroom, I can always sort of, you know, smooth over situations. And I think that Amelia does have a really good point. It really is hard at the end of a night, if, you know, if certain things have been going on for the whole game, to kind of stop that negative behavior from a player in a gentle but firm manner. Because like Amelia said, you know, if you react too emotionally, then you're just thought of as the, you know, over-emotional female. And if you react, you know, too strongly, then you're just being the sort of like the butch female. So, you know, I'm just trying to think, you know, how.
So you're damned if you do and damned if you
don't. Yeah, and, you know, maybe you might have female listeners that have really great ways to deal with problems while
you know, Sharon, that is a fantastic point.
Okay.
And I would like to invite any female listeners to go ahead and record an anecdote of their game experience that has to do with their gender and send it to us at rulezeropodcast@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. Or you can also hit
Parting
us up on Twitter.
Yes, they can find us on Twitter. Or email me at chris@rulezeropodcast.com.
Or me at pete@rulezeropodcast.com.
Amelia, parting thoughts.
Parting thoughts? Holy cow. Can I be last?
Okay, Sharon, parting thoughts.
I think you should skip to Alicia, because I just spoke.
Alicia, parting thoughts.
Well, I guess I'm the parting thought person. My parting thoughts are gaming is awesome, geeking is great, and people will be people.
You are so our poster child.
Dogs will be dogs, and okay.
I think we're past what Depeche Mode said about this.
Basically, gaming can be a lot of fun, and if you're in a group then you're not having fun, try to find another one where you fit in better, because it might not be gender, it might, you know, just not, might not be a good fit.
They might just be jerks.
They might just be jerks. That is always possible.
Okay. Sharon, yep, back to you.
I really agree with everything that my very intelligent daughter said, and right next to me.
You know, you don't have to suck up to anybody on this podcast, right?
And I no, not a bit. Okay. And I,
you already got the job.
I think that I know. I think that gaming is, you know, like Alicia said, it's awesome, and you know, I do it because I have a really great time at it, and
I thought you were going to say you have a really great GM.
I do. I have an awesome GM.
Oh my god.
And Chris, you're pretty good too. I meant Alicia was the great.
Oh, bam!
No. Just kidding.
I feel it.
No, I'm kidding. It was a joke.
That's my heartbreak.
It was a joke. But I think that gaming can also be something that you can do with your family. And I'm so happy that we have the groups now that we have, because I really enjoy just the personalities that in most of our groups that we have right now. We have a lot of groups. So I just feel very grateful that I have good friends that I also get to play with, especially Bill and Amelia. And Pete.
And I just wanted Alicia. To say that I think gaming has been very good for my marriage, and Bill is my favorite gaming partner, and it's really been a really wonderful way for us to kind of go through our marriage together, is having this sort of pretend time. We get to explore new parts of each other's personalities and interests and creativity. So it's been a really great thing for any relationship, I think.
Absolutely.
Bill is a damn fine gamer. Can I just say that?
I think it's empirical.
Yeah, he's just one of the people that that I have just been so impressed with. But
I don't know if I'm claiming too much, but I think Bill has helped me elevate my game, and I don't know if that is something that I'm just, you know, maybe I'm just full of myself for thinking so.
No,
but I really think he helped me step up.
I think so, and you know, I don't know that much about magic, but.
Okay, in joke that I'll have to explain on the page. Thank you, Sharon. All right. Well, ladies, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
I appreciate it.
So that's it for me.
Yeah, that's it for me.
And we already gave you our contact information, so game on.
Game on.
Game on.
Rule Zero Podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. You can use our podcast in your music video or send us to your friends and family, but be sure to mention our names on our website at www.rulezeropodcast.com. Segment and closing music is by Maggie Sansone, used by permission, and is available at maggiesmusic.com.